How do you get to a point in the middle of a storm that you can have peace? And what I have found, through my trials, that once I've done everything I possibly can on through my own efforts, once I give it to God, it just seems like that's usually when the peace comes on. Mm-hmm. And so, definitely, both personal life and with Bluebell and just in worldly things, when the trials come on, I really was looking for ways to be able to say, look, you can have peace in the middle of a trial. You can get to a point that when things just flat don't make sense, that He is right there and He cares more than you will ever comprehend. And
this is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, welcome, everybody. It is so very good to be with you here on Made to Advance, and so excited about the conversation we have coming to you today. But before we get started, I do want to ask a favor. If you have enjoyed Made to Advance, please rate and review us. That really helps us get the word out about the podcast, and it also helps us bring on more incredible guests like the one we have today. Ricky Dixon is with us, and Ricky is the former president and CEO of Bluebell Creameries, the maker of the much-loved Bluebell ice cream. And now Ricky is retired, and he is the author of a recently released book called One Scoop at a Time. And he's using his experience to help others grow, overcome obstacles, and experience greater success. And Ricky, it is so good to have you on Made to Advance.
Well, thank you, and it is great to be a part of this, and appreciate the invitation. Love talking about ice cream. Love even more importantly talking about my Savior. So this is just awesome.
Well, I love talking about my Savior, and I also love eating ice cream. So here is the irony about this conversation. I thought, as any proper podcast host would do in way of preparation for a conversation like this, I needed to eat some Bluebell ice cream. And you know even better than me, because I've never had Bluebell. I've heard about Bluebell. Mm. I've heard the reputation and all that. And you know better than me, I ran into a problem here in West Michigan when I sought to eat Bluebell ice cream. And that would be what?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are not in Western Michigan.
Right.
So that would make it very tough.
Yeah. So I searched every grocery store in reasonable drivable distance from me and realized I am out of luck. So I'm going to have to listen to you talk about all of the excellencies of Bluebell here. But I have a special guest on today. We've never done this before, but our production director here at Engedi Church, he is a massive Bluebell fan. And so I thought you would appreciate, I know you get letters all the time. I read some in the book from customers and how much they appreciate Bluebell. But I thought maybe you'd get a kick out of one story of a special holiday celebration. So let me introduce to you, Justin Scopp is with us.
Hey, well, Ricky, very nice to meet you. And yes, Pastor Brian is right. I am a massive Bluebell fan, actually so much so that for this past Mother's Day, 2024, I wanted to treat my wife to something great, and it was Bluebell ice cream. So we're here in West Michigan, Holland area, and we got in the car after church on Sunday with my wife and my daughter, and we drove 2 hours just to get to the closest Walmart that had. Well, I researched it. I found it. I got it. There's a picture of me that's got four tubs of ice cream. And actually, we were going to get Cookie Two-Step because that is by far my favorite. But I heard a rumor about a new one called Gooey Butter Cake.
Oh, Gooey Butter Cake?
Yes. So good. So I wanted it. We were searching through all of the little freezer section at Walmart, and we found one, the last one. It was on the bottom shelf. It was in the back. People had passed it by because they thought it was gone, sold out. And I found it, and that was one of the ones that I took home. And so anyways, we love it. Just wanted to say hi to you.
Well, I appreciate it. That's awesome.
Very nice to meet you.
Hopefully one day we'll be closer to you, or at least right
please,
there.
Please, yeah, please. Closer than 4-hour round trip for sure.
Thanks for joining us, Justin. And did you how long did it take you to get through all of that ice cream?
Actually, probably not very long. It should have taken longer, but yeah, it was pretty quick.
Well, thanks for joining us, Justin. And I thought you'd enjoy that, Ricky.
That's now, great.
Have you heard stories of people driving considerable lengths for ice cream? I mean, how's that play out?
Whether drive or we do have a program where you can have it shipped, but the cost of with dry ice in a cooler, it gets pretty expensive to do that. But
yeah,
it's amazing. But at the same time, sounds like his wife married well. He took care of her.
Yeah, that's right.
It's so good.
Well, I need to start by asking you a couple of questions that you've probably had a million times, but I've got a slight rewording of one. So I was going to ask you the easy question of what your personal favorite ice cream flavor is, and I'm sure you've gotten that many times, but I'm going to change it because I realize that sometimes I've heard you say that you'll say kind of whatever the most recent flavor is being offered mm-hmm. is your new favorite. So here's the question I'm going to ask you, and this is going to cause you to really have to dig deep. If you had one flavor outside of vanilla that you would have to buy and that was the only ice cream you were going to be able to eat from Blue Bell for the rest of your life, what would that flavor be?
Wow, that is a tough one. So I'm gonna take the easy route.
Okay.
My immediate thought was ultimate Neapolitan because it's homemade vanilla, strawberries and homemade vanilla, and Dutch chocolate. So you get three in one. And if that's the only one that I can choose, I can still put that topping on the pie by scooping the middle out or combining them all. But yeah, that's a great question because. I do shift. In fact, my wife is visiting her father-in-law who's not doing real well right now. And so I found myself last night at the grocery store getting a few things. And there I was at the Blue Bell case, which is really awkward because I have retired. So now I'm out there trying to, I can't just go and get it out of the parlor. And
yeah.
So that was a fun experience. And I'm thinking, okay, where's that favorite flavor? And ended up with a great divide because I couldn't find ultimate Neapolitan. Great divide's two of the three. So anyway, a long answer, but a great question.
Well, I give you credit for a very strategic answer. I think most people would instinctively go to what is my favorite flavor, but I like that you go to what flavor gives me the most options over the long term. So yeah, that's great. Now, second very practical question that I've thought about many times as I've thought about your job is how does one manage to stay in shape working for an ice cream company? Mm-hmm. I just feel like it would be a bad situation if I had your job.
It can be very, very much so, I will tell you. I was doing really well until the doctor, of all things, said, your A1C number is a little higher than what it should be. And I remember laughing, thinking, well, after 43 years working for an ice cream company, what did you expect?
Yeah, right.
That's what we do. But I find now that it's all really about the size of the bowl. Because if you can keep it portion control, you can still enjoy it. And yet, when you get a large bowl, you just can't help but put a lot in that bowl.
Yeah.
And, as a salesman, I think it's great. But as a consumer, I've really tried to make it to where I can enjoy it pretty much every night, but just more limited. And of course, the exercise, what they tell you. But walking the plant is great exercise and does help in that occasion. So.
Well, that's really, that's a great takeaway for many people who are listening right now, even if they're not the most massive ice cream fans, because that trick of using smaller bowls and containers that aren't going to make the food look, smaller than it is a great idea. Tell us a little bit about just your journey into ice cream, how you got in the ice cream business in the first place.
Great. Well, actually, it's the sole reason, the main reason why I wrote the book One Scoop at a Time. Way back, as I'm getting older, it seemed like yesterday, but I had a girlfriend in high school, and I like to say that she had a passion to go to Baylor, and I had a passion to be with her. And so it was really her path to go to Baylor that got me to Baylor. Ironically, as soon as we got there, within the first week, we decided that our paths were going to go different directions. And so I remember questioning, well, here I am in, big university, Really went out of game plan, but I thought, well, God's going to open the door. And again, the one scoop at a time is one step at a time. And I found myself in a consumer marketing class that we had to follow a company for the full semester and how they relate to the consumer. And I went back to my apartment, called my dad, who happened to be reading an article on this little ice cream company in Brenham, Texas. And he said, you know, you ought to call them. That this could be a lot of fun. And I thought, boy, what the timing couldn't have been better. And so I went down, did my interview, and it was really that course of not just meeting the vice president of sales, but during that interview, the president of the company at the time, Ed Cruzy, walked in, wanted to know what I was doing. There was a feel that's hard to describe, that this is not just a company, this is a family. And I thought, I really want to be a part of this. And so that really led to me going back, filling out an application, and coming on board really at a great time. We started in 1907 as a company, but this was all the way to 1980, 1981. Mm-hmm. And we were still strictly in the Dallas, Austin, Houston area. I grew up in San Antonio, and we still didn't have it in San Antonio. And so the company was really just getting its footing on the days that were coming ahead. And so went back, interviewed, and as I say, the rest is history. Accepted a position and just kind of held on my scooper, and we took off.
Yeah. 43 years in total that you served at Bluebell, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, it's just amazing, just amazing. Such a, you know, for many organizations, and definitely this is true for churches, there is such a reward to staying consistent, to persevering, to staying in one place. I recognize for many, there are also, of course, advantages to trying different jobs and moving around. But I think your career journey is really a testimony to that idea of steady consistency over a long time. I was going to ask, when you first kind of experienced the culture of Bluebell, and you said this is more than just ice cream, how would you describe, I know, and you mentioned it was more like a family, if you were to expand on that, what made, and particularly once you started working at Bluebell, what would you say sets the Bluebell culture apart? What made it distinctive?
I think one of the toughest things that we deal with in any career is patience. We see a career path, we see a career ladder to climb. And we get into a position that once we feel like we've mastered it, we're ready to take that next step. The thing with Bluebell that made it so unique is that we were not trying to conquer America overnight. We weren't trying to be the number one brand or sell the most ice cream that we possibly could nationwide. Can that be done? Yes. Can that be a shorter run? Yes. And so the company had what they called a cinch by the inch philosophy, hard by the yard. That was kind of instilled once I came in that, look, just, you know, take a step at a time and good things will happen. And so part of that really on all counts made it to where you had it was a security that the consumer was supporting the product. They were enjoying the product. And as long as we could keep the product in the condition at the value that we believe that we were offering, then we had the whole, you know, at least the 48 states. I'm still not sure how our trucks are going to make it to Hawaii.
Yeah.
We could probably get to Alaska. So there was a long runway to be successful. And so you just kind of sat back and you didn't get caught up in that. You didn't get caught up in the position. You really hopefully got caught up in just doing the best you could where you were at and enjoying the ride. And the people that you were surrounded felt the same. And I won't say everybody, but for the most part.
Did it prove difficult to maintain the Bluebell culture as you grew and as you scaled? Or were you growing at such an intentionally incremental approach that it really just came naturally to keep replicating that cultural DNA that was present when you came on?
Yeah, I think that in some markets it became natural, but for some markets we were just a new company in town. There was a lot of our growth came from what we call the ripple effect, where the consumers were asking for the product, similar to what we were describing earlier, where we're almost in Michigan, but we're not quite there. And so you get that demand for the product, and so that opens the door. to enter the market. So if you're already well known, or at least your brand is out there, then the employees that come on can already get, they have an idea of what they're getting themselves into. But the further we got away from Texas, I would say the process took longer. When we opened up our production facility in Oklahoma, it was just a new ice cream company that had come to town. We had only been in Oklahoma for a year. We went into Oklahoma City in 1989, and then we opened up the market in Tulsa and Broken Arrow in 1990. A couple of years later, opened up our plant. But it took a process to say, you know, we're here for the long haul. This isn't just come in and punch in at 8 or punch out at 5, but we're here to do a job. Boy, you know, I'd say if you give it a 12-month period, I tell this to almost everybody that came on board. If you give it 12 months and you're still really enjoying it, then you really have a good career here. Mm-hmm. If you see early on that it's not for you, then that's great. Then go for whatever it is that's going to make you happy at the same time, because you're going to be here as much, if not more, than what you'll be at home.
Right.
So you should enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a great word. I love the story that you tell of somewhat early, I can't remember how far you were into your career, when you had a meeting come up with a couple of folks who were above you in the organization. And as I recall it, that you had some you'd been having a great career run. You came in, I think, thinking this is going to be a positive meeting. And it turned into being something a little different than what you expected. And I'd love to have you describe that and what you took away from it, because we have a lot of younger listeners to this podcast and who are maybe beginning their career journey, maybe they're students, and they're going to have some moments where they think they're doing great, and they're going to have a surprise bit of coaching come in. Tell us about that experience.
Absolutely. And not only, and I'll be more than happy to explain it, but I know that even some of our management team, when we sit down and do the old self-evaluation and they come in, you know, ranking themselves in the high nines or tens, and you've got them down on paper as maybe a 5 at best.
Yeah.
those are the raw conversations you want to have, because you really do want to see them succeed. And if you don't communicate in what you're seeing as a leader and helping to guide them, it doesn't help them. They need to be told. And so in my case, my career started fast. As I mentioned, we were really from Dallas into San Antonio in 1984. And then about 4 years later, I got the call that they wanted or like for me to go to Oklahoma and open up our first out-of-state branch. A branch is pretty much like a distribution point. We make the ice cream in one of our 3 plants and then ship it to one of our 60, now 7 branches. And so they wanted me to go to Oklahoma City and hopefully with the intent to start a new region. And I was on top of the world. I thought, this is just amazing. Yeah. Things were happening fast, and I had never been to Oklahoma, but let's do this. And so got up there, and then it got really, really quiet, and time passed. And finally, when that call came, we have a couple of annual, twice a year meetings, not annual, but spring and fall. And they called ahead of time and said, we'd really like to visit with you after the dinner. And I thought, okay, this is it, man. I was excited, pumped, walked into the room. And I mean, you could tell that, you know, there was an elephant in the room. We didn't have there was no balloons or confetti. I mean, it was just a real serious point. And the thing that was so, I guess at the time I hated it, but the thing that was really so beneficial from it is I sat down and my immediate supervisor had handwritten one full page on one side and about half on the back of things that I wasn't doing that I had been doing, or things I should be doing that I wasn't doing. And I will say subconsciously had just drifted. You know, you get to where all of a sudden maybe a promise has been made and you think, okay, well, I must be doing what I need to be doing. And I just got complacent in my talents and my ability. And I was shocked, and it was almost just the opposite. I had left San Antonio, my hometown, mom, dad, sister, 2 brothers, families, aunts, uncles, the whole thing, and moved to Oklahoma. And so as I went back to the hotel, sat on the end of the bed and just remember praying, God, I thought I did what you asked. I thought you wanted me here. I thought this is what you were going to, you know, the doors were going to open and you were going to use me here in this new role. And as soon as those thoughts came, you know, off my tongue or out of my mind, I heard him say, you're not here for your promotion. You're here for my purpose.
Wow.
And I just, I mean, I still to this day can vividly remember thinking, wow, you know, that's exactly right. Here I'm praying to you, God, to lead me where you want me to go. But I had put a title to that and really had drifted. And so still was frustrated. I won't lie. But at the same time, I thought, I've got a choice. I can either be upset, mad, walk out the door, give my notice and start with another company, or listen to the voice of God to say, listen, I've got you here for a reason. And maybe you don't see what that reason is, but I do. So get back to doing what you're supposed to be doing and just take it from there. Well, it wasn't but 5, 6, 10 years later, I find myself running the manufacturing plant in Broken Arrow. Now, I'm a marketing journalism major, running an ice cream plant. But yet, even that, when they asked me to do that, I knew if this is from you, God, then you're going to give me the ability. My job wasn't to make the ice cream. That we had people to do that. My job was to really hold on to the steering wheel and guide the plant the best way I knew how. But that experience of running the plant and also seeing the side on sales and how we operate couldn't have been a better foundation when they asked me to become president and CEO of the company, because I could see both sides of the equation, and that I would not have been able to do that if I had got caught up or if I'd have walked out the door. It was a big attitude change for me, for sure.
Well, one of the great themes that comes across in your book, and again, the book is called One Scoop at a Time. It's so much of a fun read and easy read. Like, it's not, you know, you can just kind of enjoy it. You don't have to work hard to read it. It feels like you're sitting down having a conversation with you. I felt like you were my friend before we even got on this call.
But fantastic.
But one of the things that I really appreciated as I was reading how you, I mean, in general, your story has different turns and twists that you continue to show how just the sovereign hand of God, even getting you to Baylor and different things. I think now even your journalism major, which seemingly didn't get used in your professional world, and now you have a book. So just all these themes continue. Right. God always uses all the threads. But I remember reading that story of you having that difficult conversation. And I thought, what a great example of, we all have those choices in life at key junctures to say, are we going to humble ourselves and ask, what, God, do you have me, how would you have me learn and grow from this? Or, and I'm glad you were so honest about it, there is a part of us in the flesh that says, you know what, forget this. I'm out. If they're going to say this, you know, I'll find someplace else. They don't see my value. I just love that example that you said, you know, I'm going to use this to take a kind of a dose of humility. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to grow from it. And I think it's a great word that you're sharing too, on when it comes to the leaders and managers who are listening right now. We do our team members a disservice when we're not candid about areas they can grow. You would be the first one to say today that conversation was a key one in your professional journey, and it wouldn't have happened if those gentlemen hadn't said, hey, we're going to have a hard talk.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
I have to say, I love the subtitle of your book, which reads Stories and Lessons from Fear to Faith. And I think a lot of people resonate with fear and anxiety. I would love for you just to maybe expand a little bit on why that subtitle meant so much to you, that journey from fear to faith.
Yes, I think that the reason, and really that's the heart and soul of the book. I love talking about ice cream. I love talking about my journey. But also through the course of life, know that the longer we live, the more we are going to be faced with difficult times. And in difficult times in my life, I really gravitated to certain scriptures that I've used kind of as my pillars that I still go back to this day. And one is Philippians 4:6-7 that talks about, you know, the don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer, praise, and I lost the third word, but present your request. Thank you. Yes. And the peace of God, well, that passes all understanding. That how do you get to a point in the middle of a storm that you can have peace? And what I have found, through my trials, that once I've done everything I possibly can on through my own efforts, once I give it to God, it just seems like that's usually when the peace comes on. Mm-hmm. And so, definitely, both personal life and with Bluebell just in worldly things, when the trials come on, I really was looking for ways to be able to say, look, you can have peace in the middle of a trial. You can get to a point that when things just flat don't make sense, that he is right there and he cares more than you will ever comprehend. And Mark 4 is my go-to. When they get on the boat and they go out and the storms come, and where's Jesus? He's asleep.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, how in the world can he sleep during a storm? I mean, I can't even barely stand in a boat, much less sleep. And yet, as we know the story, they go wake him up and say, do you not care that we're going to die? And I just see Jesus almost more, probably maybe the original mic drops, mm-hmm. Peace be still. Well, the water not only is calm, it's perfectly still. And I really literally take that to heart to say, if Jesus, you can sleep, you know the storm I'm in, you know what's going on, and yet you're the master of the world. You are the master of everything around me. And if you can sleep, then by gosh, I'm going to sleep right there by you. And so I literally mentally picture myself in that process. And peace does come. If I could elaborate a little bit more.
I would love for you to, because I think, it's funny. I don't know what people think when they're thinking, oh, this is a very successful CEO of a wonderful company. But you have walked through some stuff, both on the work front and on the personal front, to the extent you feel comfortable sharing. And so I would love for you to expand a little bit about on that, because I think it's good for our listeners to hear. Here are mm-hmm. some of the things that I walked through, and here is how that peace journey looked.
Well, most definitely. And I will tell you, I'd heard it before, but usually when you do work your way to the top, it does become lonely, or it gets a lot quieter. You don't have that sounding board to go to, whether it be personal trials or even trials within the company. I reference in the book a failed marriage obviously was a very, very low point in my life. And even if we get to a point where we have scriptural reasons to separate a marriage, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what God wants. And on the other side, I will say I can sure understand why God hates divorce, because mm-hmm. of what happens to just the way it just ripples through, your children. And so at the same time, being faithful through that, being at a point where he is all I had. And mm-hmm. so luckily, the foundation was there that instead of getting angry and mad, I probably was closer to God during that time than really probably most any of the other times in my life. Not to say that the good times you can't get close. Mm-hmm. But when I talk about the peace that passes understanding, the best another analogy that I like to use, I was a runner. I was 130 pounds. Maybe that's what helped me in the ice cream business. But when, even at Baylor, 130, 6 feet tall. So I was one skinny guy.
I guess.
And I just love to run. And so in that process, and if anybody has run so long and so far, they get to the point where they're just really exhausted. They want to stop. And all of a sudden, that second wind comes on it. It's like all of a sudden you've been able to find a place to plug in your iPhone to get it charged back up, and you start getting that second wind. In fact, I almost wanted a chapter in the book called The Second Wind, because it's amazing. I've run, 7, 8, 10 miles and feel like I've got to stop. But I was too far away from home to do that. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, where did this come from? That's the best I can do to explain the peace that passes understanding. When you get to a point, this trial is horrible. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. It's taken me to my knees. But yet you have this peace that God has it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing, amazing place to get to.
Would you say, Ricky, when you were, you could have stepped away from your marriage much sooner than you did. You spent years trying to see if we could make it work. Would you say you felt God's peace through even that difficult journey?
Yes. I did, especially at the end, because I firmly believed that you don't. I mean, divorce is just not an option. And so to end up there was devastating, but at the same time, it's not the unpardonable sin.
Right.
And we live in a broken world and we have broken relationships. And so, you know, the beauty of it is God picked up this wad of clay that got thrown off the potter's wheel, picked it back up, put it back on. And I like to say I was supposed to be a plate, but I ended up a bowl, which is more suiting to what I do. He not long after blessed me with an incredible wife. She's my biggest supporter. We've been married almost 27 years. We were able to blend a family with all, we have five children between us. I'm glad they're not on this podcast because it could take us in a different direction. But, I will say though, when it was like, this is the decision, this is where we're at. Once that decision was done, the peace was there. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is how we're going to go about it. But I had godly men. I had a godly pastor that smothered me with the word and smothered with prayer. And, there, you know, because you can be tempted pretty quick when you go through those trials. And yet at the same time, I was just very, very fortunate to have that foundation to work with, especially in those difficult times.
Yeah, and I appreciate you being so vulnerable about that particular circumstance, because even though I know you went through some really challenging times on the corporate side of things, and folks can read all about those in the book, and you do such a great job of describing them, I think most people would say nothing we will ever go through on in the workplace side, as hard as it is, can stand up to the pain that comes with the kind of family or marriage tensions that you walk through. And it's such a testimony to say, Jesus is sufficient during those times. The Holy Spirit will provide a supernatural peace, a second wind that is not from yourself, but somehow you're able to go through what many would say is one of the most difficult experiences of life and say, I know I'm walking with God here. It's such a great testimony. You, throughout the book, you have such a beautiful way of integrating your personal stories and experiences with different passages from the Bible. And I love that balance. It's such a good tool, as far as I just was reading the book thinking, oh, who could I hand this to? Because you get this fun, interesting story about the world of ice cream. And then before you know it, all of a sudden you're taking us to scripture in a parallel I would have never seen. And an absolutely brilliant job. I'm curious, but seeing all the scripture in the book, I'm curious to know what your spiritual disciplines were. You're a busy CEO leading a company that's growing. How did you stay spiritually grounded, rooted, you know, vibrant? What kind of disciplines or practices were present in your life?
That's a great question. And fortunately, when asked to be president, it was not on my radar. Now, I did talk about the promotions early in the career. we had been run with a family, the Cruzy family, for three generations. E.F. Cruzy took over in 1919, all the way through his two sons, and then one of the two grandsons, Paul Cruzy, who retired in 2017. So it was something that I will definitely say caught me by surprise. And so when the board turned in that meeting and said, we are putting you at the helm as president, at the time as president, a couple years later, they added CEO. I knew for a fact that it was a God thing. This was not a Ricky thing. This was a God thing. We were at a very low point in the history of the company. We had gone through some really, really turbulent waters, and we were still navigating our way back to shore, to stay with the analogy. But my faith was by far one of the things that was easy to go to, because that's where I spent time. I start early in the morning, always have. I'm an early riser. 4:30 is not uncommon to get out of bed. And that really relates back to, I will say, during my personal trial. I don't say agreement, that sounds wrong, but if I woke up after 4:30, it was 4:30 and on, if I woke up, it was God's way of saying, I want to talk to you. That's how I approached it. So if it was 4:33, it's time to get up, because the creator of the universe is wanting to have a conversation. And it was a game changer for me. And so now I will say, now that I'm retired, today it was 5:05.
You're really slacking, Ricky. Slacking.
My wife laughs at me. 5:30, maybe. If I'm in bed at 6, she thinks I've died. You know, she's over there. Are you okay? You know, you wake up.
Checking for a heartbeat and whatnot.
That's right.
What would you do though? You're up that early. What's your conversation with God look like? Your prayer time? How do you approach Bible reading? How does that look?
Yes, a couple of things. First, independent Bible reading or independent just conversation with God. I won't say it's really lengthy, but it's preparation. It's starting the day, acknowledging the creator of the universe is right there. There's a group of five other men that I've gotten close to that still are down in the College Station area, that we pick a book of the Bible and we pick a chapter a week, and we literally go chapter by chapter, book by book. I'm thinking we're now through 18 different books.
Wow.
We did Genesis a couple of years ago, and there's 50-something chapters, so it took all year to get to Genesis. But so we do a thread. We don't communicate we do it by text, but we're not talking to each other. So you'll read and then put down your thoughts, and then you're good for the day. And then through the day, others will jump in. So that's something that I've been disciplined. I haven't been as disciplined, I will be honest. And if they're listening, they're going to be laughing because they said, what happened? You retired and you're not there every day. I will say the last thing, especially as president, I took that extremely serious. I really, truly believe that, I needed to stay humble but confident because I had such a great mentors before me. Mm-hmm. Romans 12 is a great one through 12 that talks is a template to know God's will and how to love and how to be patient and just really just some great principles, whether you're Christian or not, especially. But the last element was I began walking. I would get up and go out for at least a 2 to 3 mile walk. And something that I hadn't done is listen. I would walk at the beginning of the walk and I would just pray, God, whatever you want that you want to say to me, just lay it on my heart. And I'm just going to listen and turn music off, I had my pods in or whatever, but I just would take whatever was coming in as his way. Okay. And it could have been something at work. It could have been something with family. It was also a time that it gave me that I could pray, God, who have I told that I'm going to be praying for? Put them back on my heart, because a lot of times we'll say to someone, yeah, we'll be praying for you. And yet we get caught up in our own. So that it's a whole lot there, but that from 5:30 to really almost 7 o'clock is just a special time. It always has been for me, but especially during the CEO days, because there were days they were monumental. It was like, oh my gosh, this is huge. And yet the peace again that was there, okay, let's go do this. I know you're there and you'll guide me through it.
And it sounds like being engaged in a local church was also probably from early days, because I know you've said your parents were just really great Jesus-loving people, authentic followers of Jesus, really. And also I loved when you talk about your parents, you say they really stressed you're going to follow Jesus, and even as faithfully as you might follow him, you're going to experience great highs, but you're going to also experience great lows. It was a great example to me, even what you said about your mom and dad, for a really authentic both modeling and teaching on Christian faith. But it sounds like that kind of engagement at church proceeded through your adult life as well, I take it?
Yes, all the way through and still today. Yeah. I feel like when you're surrounded by people that can not only be praying for you, but, iron sharpens iron. You need that accountability. And so what a better place to do that. And church isn't perfect. In fact, it's just the opposite. But collectively coming together to try, and we're saved by grace, but we still should be striving to please him in everything that we do.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The church has been very, very instrumental in my growth.
Well, I appreciate you saying all those things, because sometimes I talk with folks who feel like, I just don't know how I could ever make time to read the Bible, or I don't have time for community, or I don't have a need for a community. And I think it's good to hear someone, here you are running a company. If anybody's got an excuse to say, oh, I don't have time for church, I don't have time for Bible reading, I don't have time for community, it's somebody who's running a major organization. And what I hear you saying is just the opposite. I need those core spiritual disciplines present in my life so I can stay spiritually healthy, spiritually vibrant, to be the leader, the father, the husband that I want to be. Fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because we're human, and pride and all those things that come in, the people absolutely love Bluebell. And so I recognize that it's not Ricky, it's Bluebell.
So
when I leave, it's still Bluebell.
Right.
In fact, that was not a principle that I had to ever get caught up in. But at the same time, if you don't have that, if you isolate yourself, especially from the spiritual side, it can not only get really dark, you can definitely go down a path similar to the one I described early on in my career, where you think you're on the right path, but you wake up and you realize that you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what I would do if it wasn't for my time with the Lord.
Yeah.
And knowing that he's there, and that, yeah, the times that I've messed up, it's easy to fall back on my knees and say, boy, I blew this one.
Mm-hmm.
It
sounds like God graced you with a spirit that was really tuned in to a very humble approach, both to your own leadership and to your role in the company and your influence. I'm curious, the company's growing. You have a very visible position, obviously successful on economic front, that kind of thing. Did you have to do much to keep your feet to the ground and sort of have that, I'm just here to serve people, spirit, or did that come very naturally to you? It seems like it's easy to start losing touch with ordinary life when you mm-hmm. start entering into a certain echelon of success. I'm curious if that was something you had to be intentional about, or did it just come naturally to stay real grounded?
I would almost say maybe 75-25. And when I say that, it does come natural. I enjoy people. And so to carve out time during the day, when I ran the plant, it came real natural to go on the production floor on a daily basis. I enjoyed that. I loved interacting with the people and getting to know what they were doing. And, you know, what I found is it takes everybody almost as if in a relay race, from the time the first runner runs and hands a baton to the second. We just saw firsthand what happens when the baton drops. And so everybody has a specific role. And when done correctly, you see the reward on the other side. And so that encouragement, just being, I don't necessarily want to go down and teach, but I want to be accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to go down. And if they want to ask me, hey, I didn't like my raise, or hey, you know, this, I want them to have that freedom to be able to do it and then get them directed in the right direction. And so the reason I don't give it 100 on the scale is because as a CEO, you can get caught at your desk, or you can get caught up into issues that demand your attention, and you really need to stay focused and stay in the moment for that. So even though it's ice cream, there are some days that it doesn't seem like it's just ice cream. So I would say COVID messed that up a lot too, where we couldn't go down. You know, I felt like if I got COVID and I'm walking the entire plant, then I'm not doing what I should
right.
be. But at the same time, you still want to be visible. You'll still be, it's harder with our branches because we have so many. So, to be
sure.
able to go out to see all the branches makes it almost impossible.
Yeah. Sounds like though, spending time, sort of on the ground and with, just the folks that make up Blue Bell keep you grounded and rooted in terms of your role as a leader. One of the things I love, you have a personal mission statement. I strive to inspire others to reach their full potential and achieve their goals, fostering a community of resilience, growth, and success. And I'm curious that, you know, what you describe as your personal mission statement is honestly right at the core of what our podcast is about. I really want to help encourage and equip people to live into their best future. And I, from your interactions with people over the years as a leader and maybe even since retiring, what do you feel like are the most common things that get in the way of folks reaching their full potential?
I think the first thing that immediately comes to mind would be the grass is greener on the other side, that you get into something that's going to demand work or demand something that you weren't anticipating. And so the attractiveness to jump, and I see that more today than I did even 15, 20 years ago. The last 10, we've seen it quite a bit. But I think that, you know, what I try to stress is I truly believe you're here with a purpose. I believe God placed you here. He has a purpose in your life. Early on, even that moment back at the hotel room, I said, God, whatever it is that you want, but would not just the purpose, but would you put inside me the passion? Put within me a passion to do, if it's to whatever that task is.
Mm-hmm.
But the third one is the one that probably is the hardest and the one that causes probably the most difficulty in people's lives, and that's patience. We're just not patient. And so, I'm not saying you come on board, whether it be a Blue Bell or any job, that's where you're supposed to stay for 40 years. It could be that you're there for a season and God has other plans for you somewhere else. And again, I encourage that. If someone comes to me and they've been there 10 years, but their heart's not there anymore, mm-hmm. The last thing is I wanted to try to force them to staying, but patience is part of that process that I will again go back to the clay. I'll go back to those years that I thought, you know, I'm going to run a plant the rest of my life in Oklahoma. He was molding me. He was making me and into what he ended up using me to do. And so I would say my words of encouragement is pray that God's got you where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then get where you're supposed to be, but then be patient.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard because on the one hand, and I think this is a good value to be celebrated, but there's so many tensions we have to navigate in our hearts because that idea of being aggressive and getting after something is a really good thing. And so how do you, on the one hand, have that sort of aggressiveness towards what you believe your purpose is to be, and then yet be patient and let things come to you? And I don't know, boy, that's a tough one to work out.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say it this way. To be the very best you possibly can be at doing what you're doing, because you can always improve, whether you're a professional golfer or an athlete, I think I was reading Scottie Scheffler this week and that he was talking about his victories. And it seemed to me what he was trying to get across is that I just want to keep being the very best I can be and keep improving. And if that means winning, then that's great.
Yeah.
But he also seems to be the kind of individual that if he doesn't win, he's still satisfied that he's serving God in the way that God's placed him to do. And again, I'm speaking for Scottie, and I hope
sure.
I'm not misinterpreting that. But that's kind of what I guess I'm saying is if you focus on the next step, you could trip on the one you're taking.
Mm.
And so I think that you can always improve. There are positions in the company that within our company that are repetitive. So, how long can you package, half gallons of ice cream? We have some that's all they want to do. That they love to do. They've got it down. But for others, if that's all they did, I don't know if I could do it after, a month or two or a year. And I'm being honest with you.
Yeah.
But, again, that's where you find that. Am I where I'm supposed to be? And am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
It's a battle. I won't lie. And the world will scream at you. You should be moving up by now. You should have a new position or whatever. I think the desire's there. I quote Mark Batterson. He has a book called If, and he talks about the day you start dying is the day you stop dreaming, and the day you start living is the day you find a dream worth dying for.
Wow.
And so I'm a big dreamer. I think that's when you just give up, then everything starts to shut down. But so when I talk to students, whether it be in college or high school or even new employees, dream big, dream big, and pray that God will place within you the dream that he has in store for you. At the same time, don't focus so much on the end. Focus on the present and let the end take its place.
Boy, that's such good wisdom. And I think part of why it's difficult is because it is paradoxical. What I hear you saying is be present in the moment, give it your best. And for those of us who follow Jesus, work as unto the Lord, I'm going to be fully present and do my best work, but have this dream that I'm pursuing by faith, and yet not, don't stock everything and I've got to get that thing and that's the only way I'm going to be happy. Now, just for fun, I would love to hear you, some people have obviously different dreams. Any particular dreams that you've had that you'd go, this put me in the category of that stretches me. How can, because you becoming the leader of Bluebell wasn't something that was on your radar. So for example, there is where your reality outpaced maybe even some of your dreams. What's been either a dream in your past, or maybe there's something currently, you're retired and you're saying, hey, I still, as somebody who stepped away from my paid work now is I've got a new big dream that stretches me. Talk to us about some dream examples.
It's a great, great question. And I'm not going to do a good job on answering it, but I'm going to give it my best. My struggle really, to be honest, at the end of the career was, am I stepping off at the right time?
Hmm.
If I really hadn't planned to be president and or if God placed me to be president and CEO of the company, am I just stepping off because I can? Or is this the time to step off? And so the process was about a 2-year from the time I told the board that we had sold our house and relocated my wife closer to grandkids. And I wasn't ready to step down, but yet at the same time, I knew we were getting closer. But during my prayer time, instead of trying to come up with that dream, and that's why this is hard, I truly believe in my heart that he has something for me. And so if it's just playing with grandkids and nurturing them, that's great. I think it's more than that, though.
Yeah.
And so I've tried to be open-minded to the book dropped in my lap. I got the phone call from someone that said, if you're ever going to do a book, now's the time to do it. And so what a segue into leaving work and then into, I don't like to say retirement. Instead of retire, I like to say refire. Because
I've
really got, you know, there's a lot of gas still in the tank. I have been working with Baylor University with their supply chain management group and also a mentoring program. And I'm not far from Oklahoma Baptist University in Shawnee, which is about 30 minutes from here. And I've just accepted a role of just I just went blank and I should know this, but.
Hey, you haven't started it yet. So we'll give you a pass.
I haven't started it yet. That's right. it's like a mentoring program where I'm working with their business school. I got to get that down though. That's kind of embarrassing. You may have to go back and record this. That's all good. To work with kids and or with CEOs, there's two different opportunities there. A couple of different organizations have reached out, but the key thing is though, is to take 43 years of what I've gone through and be able to share it and be able to just be available. And those two things would be my, I want to say my dreams.
Yeah.
Along with some traveling.
Well, I love that. Now I'm going to have to quote you on that. It's funny on the retire and to refire. I'm going to use that in sermons. Our producer here at Made to Advance is my friend Chuck, and he likes to call it, now am I get this right, Chuck, repurposing, right? Repurposing. Yeah, he doesn't like to call it retiring. He says it's repurposing. Part of his repurposing is helping make our podcast possible. So I so appreciate the example of all you guys who've said, hey, this whole retirement idea that one day I walk away from whatever my career was, and now I just, for some, ride motorcycles and play golf. That's just for the birds. Yes, it's great to press into a little bit more leisure and have some fun, but God still has a great purpose for you. And it's funny, as you're talking about the idea of working with some schools, my undergraduate major was at Indiana University. I was a business major and marketing. So when you're talking marketing and sales, that was the world I was living in. But our first business class was called X100, the course number was. And they had a retired executive who came in and taught X100, and he was hands down everyone's favorite teacher because he would take the concepts that you're learning and he would constantly wed those with real world experiences. And like you, he's just got a great heart, great sense of humor. So we learned tons and laughed. And it was literally one of the best experiences I had in business school was that single class. So I think you've got some great influence in front of you with these educational opportunities. That's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's executive in residence. If I got the title down,
okay.
I'm running it through my mind. But anyway, I really am excited. And Oklahoma Baptist University seems to be a really beautiful campus. They had a tornado hit about a year and a half ago, and actually did damage to every single building on campus. But they're in this rebuilding phase.
Okay.
But God's just doing some great things there. And
that's great.
When the president reached out, I said, "Let's do this."
That's really, really cool. You know, I was thinking about the fact that you've retired, refired, you've written a book, and by the very nature of writing a book, you're forced to really reflect and contemplate on your many years serving at Blue Bell and even before, what brought you to the place you are. It seems to me that such a reflection exercise would, on the one hand, cause you to be grateful to God as that comes through over and over in your book. But I also wondered, is there anything you thought, boy, I would have done that differently now that I sit there and look back on it? Do you have, I know most of us as leaders, you know, we want to keep staring at the windshield and not spend too much time looking at the rearview mirror, looking backwards, so to speak. Anything that you had on a, you know, you just thought, I wish I would have thought about it differently or approached it differently now with hindsight as a benefit?
Yeah, and I'm sure there's pages of things I could come up with as far as looking back. One, when I was in the plant back in Oklahoma, the one thing I did want to do is actually to make homemade vanilla. that's our flagship.
Yeah.
So I started the process. I'd get up early, go in when the milk trucks would come in, and how we go through that whole process. We got all the way to the freezers, but it gets kind of complicated, and I just felt like, you know, leave that to the experts. But that's more on a personal basis.
Sure.
I think that from a leadership, you know, it's like with your family and your kids, you only have so much time. And so to invest yourself in when you have that opportunity, I'm sure there were thousands of moments that I could have gotten up from the desk and just been, you know, been with the employees or, you know, whatever that might be. But to just make the most of every moment, because life is short.
Yeah.
And to be the very best you possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing major comes like, boy, I really dropped the ball here. I'm sure we're going to hang up and I'm going to go, oh, man. I'm glad my wife's not here. She could just be rattling them off. You know?
That's right. Well, that's why my wife's not here, too. So,
yeah.
But you know, that really is, even just what you said is so profound, because you've built a great company. You could feel really significant just about its success. But to think about when you look back, the thing that strikes you is if you could have done anything, maybe a little bit more, it would have been even more investment in people.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Just a great testimony with the benefit, again, of hindsight, to say it is so mm-hmm. much the relationships that matter, isn't it? I mean, it really is.
That's
those
right.
deposits we're able to make in people's lives. And I'm sure that, you know, you think about that from the deposits that were made in your life.
That's right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Relationships are key. And it goes back, you know, again, I tried to put that in the book, but from the time mom and dad are trying to explain that when you become a Christian, it's not just checking a box, it's walking with the Savior. And so I was just really blessed to have parents that had that approach, because in unfortunately good times and bad times, good relationships are not so good. They're all, everybody's, you know, made in God's image, and God loves them. And so
yeah.
To invest in that, I think is what we should be doing.
Yeah. So good. Anything before we end our conversation today, anything else you'd want to share with us, Ricky?
I just need to get you some ice cream. That's for sure.
Well, I'm not going to lie. The thought did cross my mind.
Yeah. So we're going to have to work that out. That is for sure. But
someday.
No, I can't thank you enough. This has been just a blessing. I could sit and visit all afternoon. I really do thank you for this opportunity. And hopefully the book will inspire. And you know, the ultimate goal is someone comes to know Christ. So that would just be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, again, I've said this throughout our conversation, but just really commend you on a well-written book. I feel like it's so authentic, it's humble, it's vulnerable, it's scriptural, it points to Jesus consistently. And it felt like, man, if I were asking, what does it look like both to be a follower of Jesus on the job, and even specifically to be a leader who is trying to walk with Christ as best as I can while dealing with a role that comes with a lot of challenges, I felt like, wow, Ricky just feels like a mentor to me reading this book. So thank you for putting that material out there, and I'm really, really excited to see what God does through your life in this next season of Refiring.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Really appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ricky. And one of the things that I took away from it is he just had this steady consistency to lean into his relationship with Jesus throughout his career journey. Boy, you read the book and you know Ricky went through some significant high moments, but also some really, really tough challenges in leadership and in personal life. And I just want to say, I know, you know, not everybody listening right now is a follower of Jesus, or maybe you've heard about Jesus or been around the church, but you really haven't taken that step of giving your life to Christ, where you've said, Jesus, I want to begin a relationship with you. I want to put my trust in you and ask you to forgive my sins. I want you to be the leader of my life. And I would just encourage you, if you haven't taken that step yet, it's time. God wants to welcome you home. And then, like Ricky, you can start living out your journey with a steady, faithful dependence on Jesus, who is indeed able to give you peace and rest, even in the midst of storms. Like I said, I hope you've enjoyed this conversation today. And if you have, please rate and review Made to Advance. That really helps us get the word out about what God is doing through this podcast. This has been a production of Engedi Church. We have got more great conversations coming your direction. And so until next time, just know you were made to advance.